You're listening to the Paranormal Peeps on the Dark Cast Network. Come to the dark side of indie podcasts with the Dark Cast Network.
We have cookies. Between the realm of the dead and the journeys of the living, join Josh, Jamie, and Elisa as they delve into the vast world of the paranormal and breathe life back into the history of the departed.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Paranormal Peeps podcast. And we have such a great show for you guys today. We are going to talk about the Alamo.
Yes, but before we get to that, we have an event coming up.
We do.
Anybody? Event? Anybody?
Yeah.
What is it?
It is a public investigation at Benson Grist Mill on Friday the 13th in October.
Woohoo!
Does it get any better than that?
Not really.
I would say no.
I mean, this doesn't happen very often in October. Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
This is the time to ghost hunt, guys.
Yes. So, yeah, this is our second annual. So we did this last year and it went over so well that we decided, what the heck, let's do it again this year.
Yeah. And so we're going to have a couple vendors come in.
Yeah.
And we're going to have Lavinia's Eden again.
Yes. She's got amazing stones and crystals and
wraps,
wire wrapping that she does around these crystals and stones that is absolutely phenomenal. Beautiful. Some of the best I've ever seen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Honestly.
So bring your monies.
Bring your monies.
And then Jamie's going to have a booth this year.
Yeah, I'm going to sell some goodies. So I do, around the fall and winter, I do homemade caramels. And
guys, they are tasty.
And I do all different flavors, guys. I got everything from like cake batter to like lemon and original black licorice caramel, which is actually really good, even if you're not a black licorice fan, like Josh.
I hate black licorice, people. It is awful. It is, honestly, it is the worst flavor that was ever invented. I don't know why anybody would ever put that in their mouth. Except for Jamie's caramel, because it is delicious.
Yeah, see? So, yeah, and I'll have cookies and, you know, maybe caramel apples, and I'm just going to have a variety of things. So
bring your monies.
Yes.
Again, bring your monies. And we'll be serving cocoa and cider and chips and
that's all going to be covered in the cost of the ticket. So
yep.
You're not going to worry about that.
Yep. So there's little refreshments and stuff. We'll have a couple porch heat lamps out there.
Just in case it gets cold. It is October. It is Utah.
You never know.
Yeah.
It's either going to be t-shirts warm and jeans, or it's going to be coats and gloves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And also wear your costume, guys. So this is supposed to be a Halloween event.
Costume contest.
Yep. And an investigation. We do have first, second, third prizes. We'll have a couple door prizes as well, just like raffles or whatever. But if you have like a cape on your costume or
a mask
or any of those things, make sure that you bring a change of clothes so that when you're investigating going into these buildings and up and downstairs and whatnot, that you're not going to get tripped up, you know,
or trip anybody else
and that you can see. So no, you know, when you investigate, no masks. So, and wear good foot attire because it's important.
Yeah. I mean, these are older buildings. They're not, I wouldn't say they're super old, maybe 50, 60 years. So they're not bad, but you don't want to be wearing, you know, like heels and try to go up and down wooden stairs.
No.
With slats in them, because you don't want to catch a heel.
Well, and if it rains, there's snails galore.
Yeah.
And you don't want that in sandals.
Yes.
That's so nasty.
So.
Oh, poor snail.
Slippery snail. But all in all, it's going to be a great time. And where can they find tickets?
So you can get the tickets on Eventbrite. So just look up either Benson Grist Mill Paranormal Investigation. You can look up Cold Spot Paranormal Research. Those will bring up our page for the tickets. Or you can find a link on our social media accounts.
Yes, you can. And how much are tickets?
Tickets are $20 a piece.
Yes, guys.
Cheap, guys. Come on. It's going to be fun.
It's a big place. There's plenty of room, plenty of buildings, snacks, costume contests,
and
vendors,
ghosts.
And most importantly, ghosts.
What more can you ask for? Food,
and
fun,
ghosts. And it's all on Friday the 13th.
Seriously, guys, this is going to be so much fun. I can't wait.
I'm excited.
It's going to be awesome. All right, on to the Alamo, huh?
Alamo.
So if I was to say the Alamo, what's the first thing that comes to everybody's mind?
War.
Yes.
Pew-pews.
Pew-pews.
Pew-pew-pew. Bang-bang.
Right. And that's what I think of, too. The first thing I think of is remember the Alamo.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But most of us don't even know why.
You know, that's very true.
And also, most people don't know that the Alamo is 300 years old.
It's got some age on it.
It's got some serious age. And I would say it's probably one of the oldest buildings west of the Mississippi.
I wouldn't know.
I wouldn't know. Because
I'll just believe you.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
All right. So we're getting to just a little bit of its immaculate history. After several years of petitioning the Viceroy of New Spain, Fray Antonio San Buenaventura was granted permission to establish a mission at the location of the San Antonio River. So after Father Antonio de San Buenaventura performed the rites and rituals establishing the mission San Antonio de Valero west of the San Pedro Springs, located just a few miles from the headwaters of the San Antonio River. So this is the start of the mission for the Alamo. Thing is that's not actually the permanent location. So it actually ended up moving to its first location in San Pedro Creek, and then it moved to another location, which is near the modern-day St. Joseph Catholic Church. So it appears that the first location was not adequate, as Fray Olivares moved the new mission within a year. Also, the second location seemed to be better, with the land able to be watered, proximity to a stone quarry, and an abundance of natural resources. However, as they were constructing it, they had to abandon it because of a hurricane in 1724.
Oh, no.
That's terrible.
So it's like, first one, no good.
Second one, better, but still not good.
Third time's the charm.
Exactly. Yeah. So they actually constructed this construction of the stone convento started immediately. So now if anyone's wondering what a convento is.
I am.
It's the area set aside for the clergy.
Okay.
It housed the priest's private quarters, as well as offices, the refectory, and private gardens. The mission church began construction in 1740, but suffered many setbacks, and in 1756, the almost completed arches of the vaulted roof and portions of the wall collapsed.
Oh, no.
Oh,
third time's not the charm.
No.
Nope.
So construction resumed soon after, but the church was never completed during the lifetime of the mission.
Wow. Sad. Well, they were dedicated.
They were definitely dedicated.
Well, we can say one thing. They never gave up.
No.
It doesn't sound like
they, no, kept, they never
kept at it, kept trying.
Yep. The San Antonio missions persisted for a much longer period with Mission Valero, but the Mission Valero was secularized in 1793. So what secularization means is it's dividing up the lands and goods that the mission had acquired and distributing them to the mission residents.
Okay.
So it's kind of giving all that stuff to the people of the mission. So in 1793, the Spanish crown issued an order for the missions in Texas to be secularized. The missions were to distribute their lands and assets to the remaining mission residents. And soon after receiving the orders, Mission Valero divided its property amongst the families and individuals that had inhabited the mission and closed construction of the Catholic faith at this location. So of all the work that they spent trying to build this poor church, it just ended.
That's so sad.
1793. Increasing threats from French and American explorers and colonists from nearby Louisiana caused Spain to send its soldiers into the region to guard and defend the viceroyalty's territorial claims. So remember, because at this point in time, what we would consider to be Texas is actually owned by Spain and is, I believe, part of the Louisiana Purchase.
Okay.
I could be wrong on that one. But anyway, Spain worried that encroaching influences could loosen their hold in Texas. Since the old mission in San Antonio de Valero was secularized, the Spanish military occupied the site and converted it into a frontier outpost and military garrison. So they went from church
to military.
To military. And the first soldiers arrived in 1803 at the old mission, where they were Spanish cavalry, and they were also known as the Alamo Company because of their hometown of Alamo de Peras. They had converted the mission's old convento into barracks and established the first hospital in Texas on the second floor of the building. So, I mean, that's pretty good. Got the first hospital in Texas.
Yeah, gotta have one of those.
And, right? And the Alamo Company continued to occupy the site, even though the long fight for Mexico's independence from Spain.
What's the matter?
Gotta have one of those.
Well, you kind of do.
You kind of do. I see they're rather important.
It was just the way they said it. It's really
sorry.
Oh, heavens. Okay, keep going. I'm really sorry.
It is a little late. It's 9:30.
She's all hopped up.
She's hocked up on sugar.
And sugar.
Energy drink.
Vitamins.
Vitamins.
Oh, yeah, vitamins. Oh, that's right.
Oh, gosh.
She's gone all sorts of crazy.
No wonder my body's like humming.
Ready? Mm-hmm. Okay. So the Alamo Company remained at the site for 32 years, from 1803 to 1835, in which time Mexico won its independence in 1821.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! Go, Mexico! Texas would soon begin its fight for its own independence. During the drive for Mexico's independence, a young officer by the name of Antonio López de Santa Ana y Perez de Liberon.
Well, good job.
Nailed it.
That's a long name.
I mean, I don't know if you actually nailed it, but I mean, good job.
It sounded
good.
Great.
So he was later to be known to the Texans as Santa Ana. He distinguished himself as a brave soldier. The residents of San Antonio were acutely aware of the unrest that brewed, with accounts of the Casas Revolt and the Battle of Medina making their way to town. San Antonio de Buxar and the Alamo was on the cusp of the culmination of tensions between the residents of Tejas and Mexico. So this area is really volatile. So Mexico gained its independence from Spain in 1821 following 11 years of conflict.
Wow.
Holy cow, that's a long time.
Yeah. But after they got their independence, they kind of failed to give themselves an identity. Mm-hmm. Like, they started out as a monarchy and then a constitutional republic. So this kind of flipped what they were doing, which also causes a lot of unrest. So large groups of people moved to Texas with the attraction of land and the opportunity to start over. People such as Stephen F. Austin helped to facilitate the arrival of immigrants to Texas by ways of colonies and land grants. Many of these colonists, along with the native population, enjoyed a semi-autonomous way of life from the capital of Mexico, which kind of breeds, like, when you have that autonomy from, like, your ruling party, you kind of, like, want your independence.
Right.
Which is really, face it, that's really what happened with the colonies, right? We were ruled by Britain, but Britain was so far away.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, come on, king, we want our own place. And so we went to war.
Right.
So you can imagine that's exactly what happens here, too. The Texas colonists' autonomy was challenged with the centralization of power in Mexico City. So in 1833, Antonio López de Santa Anna was elected president of Mexico. When he abolished the Constitution of 1824, it prompted a Mexican Civil War and Texas independence movement. So on October 2nd, 1835, the Texas Revolution begins as tensions boil over and shots were fired in the town of Gonzales. So the Texas Army had been sent to recover a cannon that was loaned to the town for protection against aggressive native tribes. Upon their arrival, 18 men stood on the opposite side of the river and refused to hand the cannon over.
Ooh.
Give us the cannon. No.
Come and get it.
Suckers.
So that's exactly what they tried to do. But they couldn't find a way across the river. And while they were trying to find a way across the river, they were called back.
Who called them back?
The colonists. They said, hey, come back. We'll let's talk about the cannon again.
Ooh.
This time, there were approximately 180 men on the other side of the river.
Oh, jeez.
And they outnumbered the Mexican army, which had a force of 100 dragoons, which is mounted infantry.
Gotcha.
So, like, hey, come back. We want to talk. Uh-oh. There's more of them there now. Tenfold.
Reinforcements.
So that night, the men of Gonzales crossed the river searching for the Mexican army. It was foggy, and both defensive forces bumped into one another in the night.
Oh, pardon me. Oh, wait a minute.
Hold on.
Sorry, brother.
Oh, wait.
So you can imagine, instead of fighting, they're just like, we're going to fall back, and we'll just fight in the morning.
When it's not so foggy out.
Yeah.
So you don't kill each other on accident.
Right? Oh, my.
And so that's exactly what they did. They met on the field of battle on October 2nd, and Texans fired the first shot.
Wow.
Which obviously led to the war.
I mean, do we know it was the Texans? It's kind of like the whole Han Solo who fired first.
Well, good question. I don't know.
It's hearsay.
I am assuming that because they won that they're writing the history, so they're going to say they fired first.
Okay. Sounds great.
They just want to be the aggressors. They're going to take them out.
I would love to see journals of this. You know, if anybody...
Oh, that would be fascinating.
Who lived through it.
Yes.
to read their journals to see what they had to say about it.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Mm-hmm. So by mid-October, the volunteers had amassed to over 400, with individuals such as James Bowie, James Fannin, and Juan Seguin arriving on the outskirts of town. These men were under the command of Stephen F. Austin. So in October 28, 1835, as the Texan army lay siege to San Antonio, a group of Texans and the Mexican army clashed at Mission Concepcion during the foggy morning skirmish. There's a lot of fog.
It was a foggy time.
It was the foggiest of times. It was the best of times.
No, just foggy.
Maybe not the best.
It don't sound so far like the best, no. But it does sound rather foggy.
So Bowie and Fannin led a group of Texans to victory over a detachment of 275 Mexican army troops led by General Martin Perfecto de Cos. Once again, the Mexican army was defeated with over 50 casualties and the loss of a cannon, which I can imagine like having like your artillery gone at that time was probably a pretty big loss considering.
You didn't have many?
Yeah, you didn't have many.
Yeah, it would be.
So on November 26, 1835, the Texan army once again defeated the Mexican army in the grass fight, a battle that involved the Texans thinking the Mexican army was bringing the army payroll to San Antonio. Instead, the arriving troops were bringing grass and hay for the cavalry. With the arrival of winter and the ongoing siege, grass and hay were in short supply and it had to be brought in for the Mexican cavalry. So it's like, hey, we're going to get your money. Oh, we got your grass and hay instead. Still a devastating loss.
Yeah, that's a blow.
Yeah.
So Santa Anna's army began to arrive in San Antonio de Boxer on February 23rd, 1836. Their arrival prompted members of the Texan army to enter the Alamo, which was by now heavily fortified. So the Alamo had 18 serviceable cannons and approximately 150 men at the start of the siege. As the Mexican army arrived, a parley was called by one of the two Alamo commanders, which was James Bowie, a famous adventurer and knife fighter, which if you guys know the Bowie knife.
That's where it comes from.
And ancestor to David Bowie. Just kidding. Come on, you were all worth thinking it.
I was.
See?
You know, it actually could be true. We could be joking about it, but it could actually be true.
You never know.
That would be cool.
You just really never know.
So Green B. Jameson, a chief engineer of the garrison, met with Mexican officials. Santa Anna's terms were surrender at discretion, meaning he would decide their fate. The other Alamo commander, 26-year-old William B. Travis, answered with a cannon shot from an 18-pound cannon.
Whoa.
And then the siege of the Alamo began. Santa Anna ordered a red flag to be flown from Santa Fernando Church, showing that no quarter would be given. Which, if you're wondering what that means you're not going to be safe. So on February 24th, 1836, with the garrison surrounded and the Texas Army at the Alamo outnumbered, one of the most famous letters in American history was written by William B. Travis, which I have right here.
Oh, imagine that.
Do tell.
So it says, to the people of Texas and all Americans in the world, fellow citizens and compatriots, I am besieged by 1,000 or more of the Mexicans under Santa Anna. I have sustained a continual bombardment and cannonade for 24 hours and have not lost a man. The enemy has demanded a surrender at discretion. Otherwise, the garrison are to be put to the sword if the fort is taken. I have answered the demand with a cannon shot, and our flag still waves proudly from the walls. I shall never surrender or retreat. Then, I call on you in the name of liberty, of patriotism, and everything dear to the American character, to come to our aid with all dispatch. The enemy is receiving reinforcements daily, with no doubt increased to 3,000 or 4,000 in 4 or 5 days. If this call is neglected, I am determined to sustain myself as long as possible and die like a soldier who never forgot what is due to his honor, and that is his country. Victory or death.
How do you say no to that?
Holy moly.
Whoa.
It says, P.S. The Lord is on our side. When the enemy appeared in sight, we had not 3 bushels of corn. We have since found in deserted houses 80 or 90 bushels and got into the walls 20 or 30 head of BBs.
I'm not sure what that is.
I have no idea what that is.
But obviously it was something
they needed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So wow. Yeah, that was his letter.
Yeah. I don't know how you say no to that.
Right.
I couldn't.
So on March 1st, 1836, 32 men from the town of Gonzales arrived to aid the Alamo. That's not enough.
No.
No.
This brought the number of defenders to almost 200.
Oh, man.
Oh, wow.
So 200 against 4,000.
3 or 4,000. Yeah.
That's a letdown.
Yeah. That's not enough. On March 2nd, 1836, Texas declared its independence from Mexico. On March 3rd, 1836, courier James Butler Bonham arrived at the Alamo with word from Robert Williamson informing Travis help was on the way. Unfortunately, it would not arrive in time. On March 5th, 1836, Santa Anna held a council of war, setting forth this plan for a four-pronged attack of the garrison. At dawn on March 6th, 1836, the 13th day of the siege. So they've been in the Alamo for 13 days at this point in time.
Yeah.
The Battle of the Alamo commences. Fighting lasted roughly 90 minutes, and by daybreak, all the defenders had perished, including former congressman from Tennessee, Davy Crockett.
Wow.
The loss of the garrison was felt all over Texas and even the world. Defenders were from many different countries, including some defenders who were native-born Mexicans. Following the battle, Santa Anna ordered the defenders' remains burned.
Man, that's a fast fight.
90 yes. minutes?
90 minutes. That is
over and done. That is like you had no chance.
You have an hour and a half.
Yeah. So the defeat at the Alamo Garrison was not the last significant loss of the Texas Revolution. On March 19 to 20, 1836, the Texan Army under James Walker Fannin engaged the Mexican Army under General Jose Urrea outside the town of Goliad at the Battle of Coleto Creek. Fannin surrendered, and his men were marched back to Presidio La Bahia. On March 27, 1836, Fannin and over 300 of his men were executed.
Oh man.
So this prompted people of Texas to begin fleeing towards Louisiana. Like, we're getting out of here.
Right.
So as they fled, General Sam Houston marched with the Texan army behind the fleeing civilians. Santa Anna left the Alamo at the end of March in the search of provisional government of Texas, which had been meeting at Washington at the Brazos and declared Texas independence with a new constitution signed by delegates between March 1st and March 17th of 1836. So on April 21st, 1836, the Texan army under Sam Houston attacked Santa Anna's army on the banks of the San Jacinto River with the cries of, "Remember the Alamo, remember Goliad, God in Texas." The battle lasted 18 minutes with a resounding victory for the Texans.
Wow.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
We thought 90 minutes was quick.
Yeah, 18.
Whoa. 18 minutes.
So the following day, Santa Anna was captured and brought to Sam Houston. Agreement was made and the Republic of Texas was born. The Texas Revolution, while short, was changing the course of U.S. and world history.
I'll say. Wow.
And that is not all for the Alamo. That's just the start. Yeah. So that's the beginning and the start of all of this craziness at the Alamo. It's probably the most known story of it. And if you would think that was the end of the story of the Alamo, it's not. It's just like the interlude.
Right.
After the Texas became a state, essentially, the U.S. quartermasters took over the Alamo grounds and they actually started reconstructing it because after the fighting, it was badly damaged. So the Alamo church needed substantially more work to make it functional for a quartermaster. At the time the U.S. Army arrived, the earthen rampart construction during the fortress period was still present. The diary of Edward Everett details the removal of the rampart as well as clearing out of the other rooms within the church. One of the church interior was cleared and a roof was added to the structure. The wooden gable roof built by the U.S. Army was the first roof that the church had possessed in all the years of its existence. So it finally got a lid. And then in 1860, the 16th president of the United States was elected, who was Abraham Lincoln, which starts the Civil War. And during that time, the Alamo was both occupied over time from battles by both the Confederacy, because if you guys remember, the Texas military, Texas was part of the Confederacy. And so they started out taking over the Alamo. And then after the Civil War ended in 1865, the Union soldiers took over the Alamo. And so during the time, all of this time of military occupation, they built it up, they made it better, they made barracks just to house people and all this stuff. In 1883, Texas legislative session, a bill was authored directing the state to purchase the Alamo Church from the Catholic Diocese of San Antonio, and the state gave the responsibility of the care of the structure to the city of San Antonio. And so that kind of ushered in the new age for this building.
All right.
So it had quite the history.
Yes, it did.
And that was only like a synopsis. There was still more that happened from 1883 to present even.
Yeah, it would take us forever to cover.
It would be so long.
You think that was short?
Well, you think that was long? Yeah. That was actually short, right? Compared to what we could give you.
Exactly.
Now that we've gone through all that history, there were a lot of misconceptions too. that people, you know, think happened that really didn't.
Well, I can believe that. There's like, one, there was a 300 years of history.
Yeah. So there's bound to be some misconceptions and, you know.
And things of lies, of even lies associated
yeah.
to it.
Yeah, exactly. So one of them was that there were no survivors.
I honestly thought everybody was killed.
Yeah, but that's not true. So
where would the stories come from?
The Mexicans.
Yeah, we come from the other side. Right. So there were actually survivors, about 20.
That is not a lot.
That no. is not a lot, but there were survivors.
Can you imagine the survivor's guilt?
Oh, that'd be awful. It'd be so horrible.
I think I'd just be mental at that point.
Oh, that's terrible.
You know what I mean? But there were no men that survived. No men, only women and children.
And only 20.
And only 20 total.
Which is so sad.
It's very sad. I couldn't even imagine. Couldn't even begin
yeah.
to imagine that.
Well, we know there were 200 men there at the barracks, at the fortification, but they didn't mention how many women and children were there as well.
No, they don't.
But they did say there were 80 or 90 houses. So if you think about it, that's, what, 90 women potentially?
And kids.
And kids of somewhere around 90 to 180 maybe.
Yeah.
That's so sad.
Yeah.
Because to me, I'm like, what is the point?
Right.
Once you hit the women and children that are not involved in it, mm-hmm. you know, I'm sure they're mentally involved, right? But they're not physically involved.
Well, and they're emotionally involved.
Right.
You know.
Yes. But it's like, why attack the innocent? That's what's tough for me.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's what war is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, it's sad.
Yeah, it is.
It's so sad.
Well, as someone who's lived it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
So, yeah.
So now we're going to go on to the ghostly encounters.
All right.
The best part.
The part that everybody's been waiting for.
And if you fast forward to this point, here it is.
But to give the history kind of helps with why we have these ghosts.
Absolutely. I do like the history, though. Don't get me wrong. I love the ghost part. I know that's what most people are waiting for. But the history, if you really listen.
Is the stories behind these.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it wasn't long after the battle had ended that the first sightings of the ghosts of the Alamo began to surface. So mere days had slipped past since the end of the bloodshed when General Santa Anna mandated that the historic church be burned to the ground. The thought that the Texans might see the mission as a shrine to those who had rebelled against him made Santa Anna furious. So angry, actually, that he ordered his field commander, General Andrade, to bring a group of cavalrymen out to the site and see that the whole place was alit in flames. Doing as he was told, Andrade agreed and sent his men. When they arrived at the Alamo, however, they were quick to turn back around and return to the Mexican army camp. Andrade demanded to know why they had not completed this task. Shaken and white-faced, one of his men stepped back. He regaled Andrade of the six Diablos who had stood before the Alamo. Each spirit had held a flaming sword encircling the group of soldiers as they blocked the entrance to the mission. The soldiers watched in stunned silence as these Diablos, quote Diablos, slowly advanced towards waving flaming swords over their heads. Can you imagine seeing this? While at this time issuing a warning in an inhuman screech, do not touch the walls of the Alamo. Heading the ghostly advice, Colonel Sanchez and his men retreated with their tails between their legs. They feared destroying the church and what might happen to them if they did. I mean, I would.
I would have done the same thing.
Well, it's funny they call them Diablos, right? Devils.
Yes.
Right.
But being has been reported to have a flaming sword? The Archangel, Archangel Michael.
Yeah.
It is very possible that they met six archangels.
Wow.
Because if you think about it, one, the church is considered sacred.
Yes.
Right. Well, and it's like, what devil would say, don't burn down this church?
Well,
unless it's like, I don't know.
The Church of Satan?
His home base.
Right.
Well, yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, still, though, like, you're talking about six beings with flaming swords.
And it makes you think, right?
Like, yeah. Do not touch the walls of this church.
Yeah.
Right? So rumors circulated that these entities protecting the Alamo were those men who died during the battle, while others claimed that vigilant specters, must have been the old Franciscan monks guarding the mission. But General Andrade only scoffed at the tale of the warrior ghosts and the terrified expressions on the men's faces. He'd go there himself then. He enlisted a few men and set off towards the Alamo, Santa Anna's orders to burn the place down ringing loud in his ears. When he arrived, he directed his troops to the longhouse barracks. Andrade instructed his gunners to aim the cannon at the front doors of the chapel, but before it could be prepared to fire, the six ghostly monks reappeared with firing swords in hand. As the moaning figures approached them, they again issued their unnerving warning. To his horror, the general watched as a wall of flame erupted from the ground in and around the low barracks. The smoke from the unholy fire then congealed into a form of a large, imposing man that appeared on the roof. Clasped in each hand was a ball consumed in fire. The specter held out the flaming weapons, and the Mexican soldiers dropped to their knees and the heels of their palms dug into their eyes to block out the sight, but it was no good. They feared for their lives. Andrade left the mission well enough alone, hightailing it out of San Antonio with his troops as fast as they could march. Okay, wait, what? Like, a big flame turns into a person who
the smoke turns into a man
who's holding
fireballs. And sounds like Bowser. Right? Except for
on top of the roof, and is like, come on, guys, I'm ready.
You want to play? Yeah.
I mean, that would scare the junk out of me.
I think it's the first time I've ever heard of any type of paranormal encounter like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that intense.
That's pretty intense.
And twice. Like, the first time it's different. I mean, it's two encounters, mm-hmm. The same encounter.
Yeah.
By two different groups of people.
Yes. Well, and it's just like in today's day and age when, you know, you tell people, you know, I was here at this location, this is what I experienced. They're like, oh, whatever, you know, and they don't get it. And they don't tend to believe you. There's a lot of skeptics. And I'm not saying don't be skeptical, because not everything is paranormal. But what I am saying is, until you experience it yourself, it is hard to believe. So I can see why he scoffed at his men and just says, hey, I'm going to go take care of this myself.
You guys must be high on something. Yeah. I will take it over.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I could not imagine. So none of them ever returned to the Alamo, and the mission would fall into ruin within the next 10 years. So this one is more about disappearing spirits. So by 1846, Texas had been annexed into the United States, and the old Alamo was then converted into a complex for the U.S. Army. But in 1871, the decision came to demolish part of the old church, leaving only the barracks and the church. The dismantlement never came. When the newspapers voiced the destruction of the historic mission San Antonio de Valero, I'm totally botched that, I'm sure.
Perfect.
Sightings of the ghosts wandering the grounds of the church began to be reported, almost all of them coming from the guests staying at the Menger Hotel. It's Menger or Menger, I'm not sure. But it's just across the plaza from the Alamo. And that's supposed to be haunted as well, which I can imagine would be. I mean, it's the land, right, too?
Right.
Yeah.
So those staying at the hotel swore that they had seen spirits of the long-ago army marching up and down the path in front of the Alamo. Some of the apparitions disappeared into the walls of the building, and others stood guard all night as if protecting the sites from anything or anyone who might seek to tear it down. So, I mean, we have heard of examples of armies and like, we've even been on ghost hunts where we have heard heard marching.
Yeah, Jamie heard it at Camp Floyd.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and we've heard things on TV shows and stuff where they've been to old forts and stuff, and they've seen things and soldiers, and they're marching and their guns, and they're protecting. Like, we've seen all this. Like,
yes. Yeah.
These experiences have come up. So I'm not surprised by.
I'm not either. Yeah.
Sounds very residual.
It does. Yeah. Like, imprinted on the environment.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a lot of emotion and stuff there. So.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Which would definitely cause a residual haunting.
Right. So rather hastily, plans to alter or tear down the Alamo were put to rest, and it became home to the police headquarters and jail instead, though the sightings of spirits never ceased. And between 1894 and 1897, the local newspaper, the San Antonio Express News, published a series of articles which highlighted the almost freakish paranormal phenomenon occurring at the Alamo. The reports described the ghostly guards which marched up along the roof of the police station, the dark figures roaming the corridors at night, and the distinct sounds of the moaning that woke up the staff and prisoners from their slumber. That would be kind of creepy, I mean, to wake up to moaning like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no thanks. No.
Nope. I don't care if you're a ghost or not. That's creepy.
Again, though, very, very, very potentially residual.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So soon the activity was so vibrant and so alive in its frequency that guards started to refuse being on patrol shift at night. The policemen were furious, but no one would take those shifts. So in fear of running across one of those many ghosts of the Alamo still haunting the grounds, the prison was forced to move not long after that. I mean, if you're not going to get workers to protect the prison, you're going to have people escape.
Yeah. Or... Oh, yeah, exactly.
So they time have to go. Yep. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. So long before the Battle of the Alamo occurred in 1836, the site on which the Alamo and the plaza was once a cemetery for the city of San Antonio. Between the years of 1724 and 1793, it's estimated that nearly 1,000 people were buried on this land. Then the battle transpired and the number of dead whose blood ran into the soil increased by tenfold. It is said that often construction workers doing work on the Alamo Plaza sometimes pulled up skulls and bones. Is it possible that many of these bones still haunt the site of their marked graves or of their unmarked graves?
It's very possible. The thing is, there's always this theory, right? I don't know if it's just horror movie theory or if there's anything that's factual based upon it. Mm-hmm. But if you think about consecrated ground, right? Cemeteries are supposed to be consecrated ground, supposed to be holy ground. If you disturb it and you don't properly take care of the bodies that are buried there, you just build on top of it. You like defile the consecration. Right. Does it cause unrest? It's a good question. I don't have an answer for you on that one.
Yeah.
But I mean, you would think that it would cause some issues. I mean,
and this is where I think, spirituality and like whether you believe in going straight to heaven versus staying on the earth, being earthbound.
Yeah.
It kind of mixes because for most people, I would assume, who believe that you just go straight to heaven, right? Why would you care what happens down here on earth? Like, why would you care what happens? That part of your life is done and over with. You're kind of enjoying this.
Right.
Right. But if you're, say, earthbound, or you're, you know, walking the earth and stuff, I think that would more affect me. I'd be like, how dare you?
Yeah.
Right? That's where I am buried. Respect my space, you know?
Quit peeing on my bones.
You know, so I think I would care more if that was the case. But in reality, who really knows?
Yeah.
There's so many questions I have.
And, you know, and we'll just never truly know until it's our turn.
Maybe when I die, I'll come back through an amazing EVP and just tell you all about it.
That's assuming you pass before we do.
Right.
Well, you guys can't die before me.
Oh, no. Now, wait a minute. This is a whole nother episode going on here. We're going to have some words.
Okay. So the next one is, they call him the little boy of the Alamo. So there's a couple different segments on this that I found, so I'm going to read you a couple of them. One of the most commonly spotted ghosts at the Old Mission is that of a blonde-haired boy. He's seen most often in the upstairs left window, which is now part of the Alamo's gift shop. As the story goes, it's believed that the little boy was evacuating during the siege of the Alamo. Though he survived, it's thought that perhaps his parents did not, and his spirit returns over and over again at the site where he last saw them. During the month of February, his little ghost is seen most frequently.
That's sad.
That makes me sad.
But if he survived,
He's looking for his mom and dad.
Right. But this is the question I would have is like, if he So he survived, or believed that he survived. Mm-hmm. So did he die shortly after, or did he go into adulthood and pass away, but this is how he chooses to come back?
Well, if you think about it, I've heard stories where they say that the spirit comes back to you in a form that you would recognize.
Right.
And okay. So maybe that's something that he knows, that they'll recognize him as a child, than if he were to live as an adult and he comes back as an adult looking for them. Maybe in his mind, he might think that they might not recognize him.
Right.
So, I mean, that's just the theory, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, a good possibility.
Could be.
I've heard where people have encounters where, like, I know that they lived to an older age, but the last time I saw them, they looked like this.
Right.
And that's what they look like when they came to visit me, because I would recognize that person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So here's another one. Generally, the most often repeated ghost story about the Alamo defies all logic. It focuses on the spirit of a little boy who was rumored to haunt the parts of the gift shop. Both visitors and park rangers alike claim to have seen a blonde-haired little boy ranging in age from 10 and 12 years of age staring out into the courtyard from one of the store's high, inaccessible windows. The small boy is only visible from the waist up and has never become a full-bodied apparition. Rangers who have searched the gift shop in hopes of catching the ghostly prankster have come up empty-handed. In each instance, they have concluded that there is no way that a real person could perch himself or herself in the window without something to climb up or some way to support themselves. The mystery only gets more convoluted when you consider the fact that the gift shop was not built until the 1930s.
Oh.
Puts a twist on it.
It does put a twist on it. But that's the thing. But we're assuming that it's like this thought process that the little boy couldn't possibly know how to enter the building because it wasn't there when they were alive. Mm-hmm. But what was there?
Right.
Was there anything there before? Because the grounds went through so much construction and devastation that
mm-hmm. we really don't know.
Exactly. There could have been another building there, or a catwalk, you know, or some type of fortification that he might have actually been up on.
Right.
And then it would make sense. Or it's an intelligent haunting and he can just move around where he wants to.
Right.
Right.
So this next one is the Mexican soldier. Along the outer walls of the Alamo, the ghostly figure of what is believed to be a Mexican soldier has been seen by tourists and locals alike. Meandering the grounds, his hands are always clasped behind his back and his chin tilted down. He shakes his head somberly. Although it can't be proven one way or another, this ghostly soldier is believed to be General Manuel Fernandez de Castrillon, one of Santa Anna's commanders who refused to lay siege to the Alamo. After the last of the firefight on the eve of the battle came to an end, 6 men were brought to Castrillon to surrender. The general offered the men his protection, but Santa Anna refused this act of truce and ordered the Texans' executions. Infuriated when Castrillon refused to follow orders, Santa Anna murdered the men himself, hacking them to death with sharp-bladed sabers, and almost killed Castrillon himself.
Jeez. Violent much?
Anger issue.
Yeah. He needs anger management.
Right? <Yeah. laughs> So this is a father and son. Various reports have surfaced over the years of seeing the apparitions of a man and a child on the rooftop of the Alamo. The spirits are always just seen minutes after sunrise, but then the image distills, jerks, and the ghostly man wraps his arm around the child and they leap off the parapet to the ground below. It would seem that these ghostly figures are a case of residual energy, for during the last moments of the Battle of the Alamo, General Andrade and the other Mexican soldiers glanced up and were horrified to see a tall, thin man with a small child in his arms leap to the ground from the parapet at the rear of the Alamo Church, end quote.
Whoa.
So he committed suicide.
Or was trying to escape.
I'm assuming trying to escape.
That's the first thing that pops in my head is he was trying to save his son. You know, it's kind of like people who jump out burning buildings. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I've seen, and I've watched enough things where, like, it is a building that's burning down or mm-hmm. whatever the case may be. And the parent grabs their child. And when they fall, the parent goes first yes. to save the child.
Yes.
And the parent has extensive injuries so that the child can go run free and get yes. away or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, exactly.
So it makes you wonder.
It does make me wonder because the church isn't that tall. It's 20 feet. It's not, or maybe 30 feet. It's not that big. Like,
no,
but it's high. Still tall enough to create an impact.
Yeah.
It is. But generally speaking, if you jump off a 30-foot building, that's like three floors.
Right.
You generally live. You might be hurt, but you generally live. But this seems like maybe an instance of death in this case.
I mean, back then when you've got that kind of injury, it's not like you got the paramedics and the ambulance to come. And
no, that's true. You died of dysentery back in that time.
Right?
Yeah.
So since the close of the Battle of the Alamo in 1836, a number of ghosts and paranormal activity at the old mission has not lessened but increased. A ghostly guard is still spotted on the south side of the roof, especially on nights when it's rainy or cold. That's cool. I mean, that's what I'd like to see him. So makes it a little more creepy. So
two nights a year.
Right. Visitors of the Alamo, which became a museum in 1905, have expressed feeling very melancholy when wandering through the main chapel area of the mission complex. Some have even felt so depressed that tears leap into their eyes and they are powerless to control their erratic emotions. So, I mean, we've gone places where you have that feeling of sadness or depression or...
like you want to cry.
Or yeah. you do.
Or you do.
Or you do. Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't happen to me very often, but it does. I can't say that it hasn't because it has. And you're like, okay, I don't even know why I'm crying right now, but I just feel this.
It's overwhelming.
Yeah. Yeah, overwhelming sadness.
I had that happen one time at the prison, at the old Montana State Prison.
Yes, mm-hmm. you did.
It was tough.
Yeah, I bet.
Others have reported hearing disembodied voices and whispers, as though the spirits are still experiencing the worry of the impending battle and phantom footsteps. It seems that even those who choose to visit the mission San Antonio de Valero, the ghosts which still haunt the old church grounds, have one singular purpose for remaining, to make sure that all those who visit forever remember the Alamo.
Oh, that was a little disjointed. Forever remember the Alamo.
Oh.
Aw.
Hold on, I got more.
Okay.
Sorry. Ordinary people insist that they have heard voices and whispers that seem to filter through the very walls of the mission as if they were attempting to communicate with the world of the living. Others tell lesser stories about their encounters with vanishing lights, eerie cold spots, and multitude of unexplained noises. In one instance, a park ranger at the Alamo encountered a ghost of a man dressed in attire from the 1830s. It was a really hot day in the late spring when the ranger first visited the suspicious man on the fort grounds, walking towards the library. As the ranger hurried after the man, he observed that he was wearing tall boots, a plantation hat, and a long overcoat. Oh, yeah, when it's hot, you're not going to be wearing a long overcoat.
No.
To the ranger's surprise, the puzzling man faded away into obscurity when he neared the chapel. When the ranger investigated further, he could not find any evidence of the stranger's passing. Others have alleged to have seen the same apparition numerous times in the courtyard of the Alamo, both during the day and at night. So this one's kind of a cool one. John Wayne. One of the most interesting ghosts encountered at the Alamo is that of the, quote, Duke himself. As the director and leading actor of the Alamo, John Wayne spent over $1.5 million recreating an exact replica of the old mission in Brackettville, Texas. In an effort to make the movie as historically accurate as possible, Wayne personally toured the original Alamo site and consulted actual blueprints of the fortress. While filming the movie, Wayne became obsessed with the sequence of events that led to the fall of the Alamo. This preoccupation with historical accuracy drove John Wayne to spend a fortune bringing the Alamo to life for the silver screen. The Alamo set was so detailed that it became a tourist attraction in its own right. Shortly after his death, John Wayne's ghost was observed at the real Alamo, walking the grounds. He has also been observed visiting and talking with spirits at the Fort's Patriotic Dead, of the Fort's Patriotic Dead. The story was so telling that a psychic was enlisted to confirm the rumors that John Wayne's spirit visited the Alamo on a regular basis.
And what was there a result of the psychic coming there?
I'm sure it was a yes. I mean, I don't know.
Does that still stand today? The one that John Wayne had reconstructed?
I don't know.
We'll have to look it up.
Yeah.
Because that's neat. I mean, there's a lot of times that these sets stay around and people start visiting them.
Well, I mean, if it's a tourist attraction on its own, then
why would they have gotten
rid of it? Why would they take it down?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Interesting.
So this next one is good old Davy Crockett.
All right.
At various times during the year, park rangers have observed a transparent figure dressed in buckskin clothing and sporting a flintlock rifle standing guard near the chapel. This is believed to be the spirit of none other than Davy Crockett himself. Other people who have seen the phantom vigilantly standing at the attention at various locations around the Alamo describe the phantom soldier as wearing a coonskin cap, buckskin shirt, and moccasins. In several instances, the figment has been observed by several different people from different angles at the same time. That's cool.
Wow.
That is almost unheard of.
Right? I don't know how you get that, because most of the time it's like, did you see that? No.
See what?
What are you talking about?
One of the grisliest phantom images to play itself out at the old mission occurs in the Long Barracks. It has all the characteristics of a residual type haunting, but it also is very similar to the fictional way Davy Crockett was said to have perished. One night, a ranger entered the barracks and observed a hideous scene. It gets kind of creepy, guys. Okay. There, leaning against the wall, was a man wearing buckskin clothing typically worn by frontiersmen during the 1800s. To the ranger's trained eye, it appeared the man's torso had been riddled with bullet holes. Before the ranger could react, the spirit of several Mexican soldiers stepped from the darkness and encircled the stranger with their bayonets at the ready. Like a coiled spring, a ghostly soldiers pounced, thrusting their long blades through the incorporeal body of the anguished buckskin-clad specter. In an instant, the encounter played itself out, and the apparition just faded away, leaving one emotionally drained ranger.
Oh.
Can you believe seeing that, like, scene?
No.
That'd be crazy.
Like, what if that's real? You know? Like, what if you actually saw the death of someone?
Right?
At that point, it doesn't really matter who it was.
No.
It's just, like, seeing that happen, that would be crazy to see just this residual.
Yeah. I think it would be terrifying. Like, people get scared of seeing just normal apparitions. Like,
oh yeah,
there's an old guy walking down the hall and he turns and goes into a door and people are losing their minds.
Yeah.
But to see not one but essentially four spirits, and three of them killing the other one.
Yeah,
like you're seeing someone's like untimely death or someone's murder, and it's like
that would be terrifying.
That could be tough.
Yeah.
Oh man, I can't imagine. Like, to me, in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, was he alive and then with all these bullet holes, and then these men come and they're like, we got to kill him off, make sure he's going to die. Mm-hmm. And they all come and stab him. Or is it like, well, he's already dead, but let's just make sure.
Let's just poke him with a stick, sticks.
I would imagine he was still alive.
Oh, that would be horrible. Can you imagine like knowing that they're coming for you?
You can survive with several bullet holes in you from adrenaline.
Ugh.
Oh, no thanks. No.
But yeah, that's the last of my encounters. And I'm sure there's many, many, many more.
I'm sure. Like, that place has got a heck of a history to it. And it seems like a lot of the hauntings, other than the Duke.
Right.
Seem to be the siege-related Alamo hauntings.
Yeah. And it seems to happen, you know, when there's a lot of residual energy that just it there's just so much that goes on there,
that emotion,
like prisons or places of abuse or like homes where people have been abused, you see the residual or you hear the residual, you know, or the wars. It's like that's a lot of energy going in one space.
Well, you gotta think too, like you talk about the stone tape theory. You know, that stones can absorb this energy and replay it. Well, the Alamo is an entire stone building. The original church was stone walled. It was completely made out of stone and then covered with like the adobe siding. So, yeah, like that's a lot of brick to absorb all of that energy.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm like, I don't know how much I believe in that. Mm-hmm. I mean, who knows? I know there's a lot of natural elements that have that energy or have, you know, produce those different things. But whether it's hard for me to imagine a stone creating an image. You know, that's hard for me. Yeah. I can imagine it soaking in energy. It's hard for me to imagine that it could put out an image.
Like project it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I can imagine, and this might be just as weird, who knows? I can imagine that just energy in that space, just hanging around, because there's just so much of it that it just plays itself out over and over and over again. Because your body is full of energy. And to me, it's kind of like an imprint.
Yeah.
You know? So I can imagine that that would happen. But either way, who knows?
Yeah.
There's really no proof of either.
No.
But
I would imagine, though, there's a couple of things that play in the factor, I think, with the hauntings here. One, a lot of people died tragically, violently, quickly.
And emotionally.
Yes. But on top of that, you have people who I think really loved the building. They loved the land. Because if you think about it, people were fighting for independence. There's a love of country. There's a love of the land
for
that too. So now you have all of that emotion of love.
Yes.
On top of, you know, violence and tragedy. And so like that's like a huge emotional cocktail for that land.
Oh, for sure. And you know, like, I mean, if I were to be stuck on the earth or choose to be on the earth, I would want to go to the place that I loved.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that would be where anybody would want to go, is to the place that they loved and be around.
Right. Which that it would explain John Wayne's.
Right.
Because he ended up getting an affinity for...
It seems like he had a strong love for it.
Yeah.
In order to put his own money into this.
A lot of it.
Yeah. And for back then, that was way more than that is now.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, probably about $10, $20 million today. So that's still a lot of cash to put forth because you love something. I would say this, though. If given the opportunity, would you investigate it?
If given the opportunity, yeah.
Why would you say no?
I mean, that's no question.
Would you, Josh?
Of course.
Well, see, there you go.
But given the opportunity to investigate anything, I would be down.
Well, no, not for me. It just depends on what it is. There are certain situations that I wouldn't. Depend on the risk.
Well, that's fair. I mean, it would... I will say this. I think it would be really cool. I can't do it because I don't know how to scuba dive. But there are sunken cities that you could scuba dive to.
Yeah.
I think it would be amazing to do an investigation underwater.
Yep. I don't know if that's ever been done.
Well, Expedition Unknown, Destination Truth. So they went and Josh Gates dove down with cameramen and stuff. And where some tanks had sunk, because there was a ship that was bringing tanks and stuff, and it sank. And so there's tanks on the bottom and they went down there and they could hear what sound like engines running.
Oh, wow.
Like from these tanks and stuff.
That's really cool.
And so there's an episode of that you can definitely watch.
Yeah.
That's neat.
But
it's pretty cool.
I don't think people have...
Like a true ghost investigation.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. One, you're limited. Like, one, you have to know how to scuba dive. And two, you...
How are you going to record?
You can.
Oh, you can.
Water's a pretty decent conductor of sound.
Well, what I'm wondering is not just recording, but I'm wondering, like, to get an EVP.
Yeah,
I wonder how that would sound. That would be really curious. I would be really curious.
It would be. Because, like, normally, like, if you're underwater and you speak underwater, there's a muffling to it. But you can still hear.
Right.
And you can still make out words. Mm-hmm. So, I guess if you picked up a clear EVP.
I mean, how neat would that be?
That'd be so cool.
Yeah.
Like, is it irrefutable evidence? No, because nothing ever is in the paranormal, but it would still be really cool.
That'd be amazing.
Okay. On to our newest segment of our show.
Yeah.
So everyone knows that if you listen to our show, we start off saying that we're part of the Darkcast Network. and we have cookies.
Yeah.
But we've never brought it to the show until today.
Yeah. So this is kind of our debut of cookie of the episode.
And what is the cookie of the episode this time?
It is a delicious s'more cookie, guys. So it's been going all over social media and you've probably seen it. So when I describe it to you, I think you're going to know what I'm talking about. It is the graham cracker on the bottom, the Hershey chocolate, and then a marshmallow on top. And then you put the cookie dough over all of that and then cook it.
Yes.
Or not cook it. Bake it. And it is delicious.
It is so good. So I baked a bunch of these this morning. We've handed them out today. We've gone a couple places today and handed them out. And to rave reviews.
Yeah, no one said that they did not like the cookie.
Yeah.
No. And so if you're questioning whether you should try this or not, do it.
You should.
Because one, it's fairly easy to do.
Super easy.
And if you don't even want to make your own cookie dough, just get the Nestle's ready to go cookie dough.
Absolutely.
And put it right on top.
Yeah.
So Jamie, how do you make it?
Well, you just take one square of graham cracker, just like you're building a s'more, really, honestly. So you just one square graham cracker, you take a part of a Hershey bar. I did like three of the squares.
But next time I would do two.
Yeah, yeah. And then I took a big marshmallow and I just kind of snipped it in half and then put the two halves on top of the chocolate. And then I just took, a ball of chocolate chip cookie dough and kind of flattened it out into like a disc or like a patty. And then just put it on top of that marshmallow.
To cover it.
Yep. And then you just pop it in the oven at I did 365 for 11 minutes. And they came out beautiful.
Guys, it's delicious. And the marshmallow in it.
Mm. Oh, yeah. So Elisa, we were videoing it earlier and she broke her cookie in half and pulled it apart. And that marshmallow pull was fabulous.
And it was awesome. Even warm, guys.
No. These were baked this morning and it's evening.
So I love s'mores.
Mm-hmm. Me too. They're some of my favorites.
And the one thing I hate about s'mores, there's two things. One, it's really hard to get a good melty chocolate and a good marshmallow on a s'mores and have it all together. Because usually, you get a nice marshmallow and then the chocolate's not melted. And it's like eating a chocolate bar with a piece of marshmallow on it.
Yeah.
The other thing is if you do get everything to melt properly, it is messy and everywhere.
And sticky.
And very sticky.
And very sticky.
Yeah.
There's no sticky.
No.
It's all the greatness of a s'more cookie.
With none of the mess.
With none of the mess. And you get a chocolate chip cookie on top of it.
It is so good, guys.
What can be better?
If it's this good and it's not even warm, just put that thing in the microwave for 8 seconds. Oh, my.
Mm-mm. Get you a big frothy glass of milk with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good, guys.
So, but I took pictures and stuff. And so we'll post those up on social media.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
So enjoy your cookies, guys.
Yes.
Happy eating.
And we just want to say thank you, everybody, for coming out, listening to us. Hope you enjoyed the show. And if you did, please give us a review. Please rate us. That helps us out in the algorithms, helps get us in front of more people.
Yeah. And if you have any suggestions for a future episode, subject, topic,
or if there's something that you want us to talk about that you're super interested in.
Yeah.
We want to hear it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Let us know.
And as always, stay ghosty, my peeps.
After the last of the firelight, oh, heavens to Betsy.
It's so hard.
It's not even a hard word. Firefight. Okay, got it.
Fisher. You mean firefight? That's what I said.
It has a lot of big names in it, too.
It does.
Words. Big.
Words hard.
Or it's tough.
Did you read this before?
I did.
He did.
I did, but it's just
it's rough.
It's tough. It's tough. So when you read it at first, you're like, Oh, yeah. Oh, I got this. And then you what go through it, you're like,
you get all tongue-tied. You know,
I'm going to botch this one. I've read this, I don't know how many times, and I'm still going to botch it, I guarantee you.
Okay, for Texas. So in 1833.
What was that?
I don't know. What was that?
Is that her? No. I just heard
it. I know, but I was looking at her when that sound happened, and it was not her.
It almost sounded like a squeaky door opening. Like a yeah. It reminded me of a squeaky door opening.
I don't know. It was loud. Whatever that was loud.
We all heard it. That was weird. Tater's in a movie.
I know. It reminds me of like the... Have you ever seen the video of a guy was like, can you imagine if this was in a haunted house?
Yeah, I've posted
it's
that.
A door and it's like,
like a witch.
Yeah, that's what it was like.
That's what it was like.
Yeah, that was weird.
And I was looking right at her and it was she was not making that sound. Her mouth was closed.
That was weird.
Cool.
Interesting.
Cool. All right.
That's going into the...
I want to listen to that again.
I kind of
like
do
when
too.
We're done. Yeah. I want to listen to this again.
Okay. Someone write down 18 minutes.
Okay. I will. I got it.
Yeah. Because I don't have a pen or nothing.
Okay. So the technist, the tech.
Today's hard.
How do you pronounce this word? T E X A S.
Taxes.
T-A-X-E-S.
Taxes.
It's like, have you seen how do you spell yes?
Y-E-S.
Oh, okay. Y-E-S spells yes. What is E-Y-E-S?
Eyes.
But you had to think about it.
I had to think about it.
I wanted her to say yes. Yes.
No, I wasn't going to say yes, but I'm like, E-Y-E-S. What?
All right. A Texas column.
Take three.
Jeez. Thank you for listening to the Paranormal Peeps podcast. You can find us on social media at Twitter at CPR Paranormal, on Facebook at Paranormal Peeps Podcast and Cold Spot Paranormal Research. And you can find us on Instagram at Cold Spot _Paranormal _Research.